You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Yeah, the psychology of it is all very interesting and new.
It is very interesting. It is very interesting.
I'm like, I have money. That's easy. It's not easier. It's much harder. It's like
debt. Oh, you find it harder than having the debt?
Yeah, I think debt payoff, you have like a number you're trying to hit and then you hit it. And then that's like a super easy goal. It's like, oh, there it is. I did it.
Hello, our lovely listeners and readers. We wanted to let you know we are moving our newsletter over to Substack, and we are very excited to now be offering a paid option on Substack for subscribers in order to get exclusive content. That exclusive content is going to involve both podcast and newsletters, and the newsletter will provide supporting documentation for those topic-specific podcasts. Our objective with offering the paid version is in order to provide the listeners, you and the readers, also you, who are interested in a higher level of personal finance, the opportunity to find that within our show. Guest interviews will continue to be free as they have been in the past. And if you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please let us know. We'd love to have you on. And we really appreciate all of your support in the pod over the last 8 years. So this is our way to offer an upgraded exclusive option for the podcast. So it'll involve dedicated episodes and also the newsletter, where we're going to be doing more exclusive content and deeper dives on various personal finance topics in order to help improve the financial education that we're offering on the show. So if you'd like to check it out, we would love to have you. You can find more details on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com.
Hey there, Future Rich fam. This is Amy, the editor of the podcast. I just wanted to let you know that this is part two of a two-part episode with Eileen. Last week's episode aired on April 11th. If you have not tuned into that episode, please listen to that episode before listening to this one. Thank you so much.
But you're living comfortably on your salary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's a good, you know, obviously, if we say retirement's 20, 25 years away, a lot, as you know, will change in that time frame.
Yes.
But it also is good, kind of like when you are coming up with, and when you're dealing with coaching with people, like coming up with a plan for now, you can always adjust the numbers. But if you just have a baseline of what we're working with, we can adjust it as we go. But if you're comfortable with what you're living on now, then I would say maybe we use that as like a target for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If like, if you can bring in, you know, around $65,000 a year, you remember, you don't need quite as much because you won't be saving.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also not going to be paying into Social Security and Medicare.
Right.
People forget that that's like 7% right there. So
that's a lot.
It's a decent number, right, that we don't need to and what's your contribution rate to your 401k?
11% right now.
Right. Okay. So there's 18% difference, just like with taking out, like you don't need to save for the 401k and you're not contributing to Medicare and Social Security anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So then 11 plus 7 is 18% difference on your current salary. So even if we say we're going to shoot for 65, and you know, the flip side is cost of living adjustments, we need to factor those in. But I think if we just come up with a ballpark number, you could say we could shoot for 65,000, and that should be, you know, you just adjust as we continue on. But 11%, that's great for your contribution.
Yeah, I was trying to up it 1% a year and
perfect,
waiting to my raise, but I'm a little, it feels like a lot right now. I'm like, oh, maybe I should slow down. I don't know.
Well, yeah, so 11% is good. I think that let's kind of back into the numbers of what we think you need for retirement. And then I think the 1% a year is great, but if there's a year you have to skip, that's fine. Like you just moved into a house, right?
So yeah, and we need to put a new roof on and all that. So
right. So that's okay. So if you have to take the good thing about like having consistently saved, right, and having control over what's coming in and going out is like, there's nothing wrong with taking a year off. I tell that to people. It's, that's fine. It's better to take a year off than push it too high and then stop it completely. Like if you just leave it at 11 and don't move up a year, that's better than saying,
right,
I'm done. I'm going to take a whole year off or 2 years off because I went too extreme and now we have problems over here. It's better to be moderate.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Moderate and consistent is better than too extreme, where then it kind of backfires a bit, I've seen. So yeah, if you can't do 12 this year, I would just stay at 11. It's fine.
That's reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you get a raise, then keep it. Okay. So yeah, I would say if you target 65,000, and so you probably haven't checked it, your Social Security like benefit amount.
I have before.
Oh, you have? Oh, good. I thought I was like the only person who does this.
I like to see the chart where it's like all the money I've ever made. I'm like, that's fun. Okay. And add that up, see how much that is. I don't remember the number. I was thinking maybe it's like 37 or 31. I don't know.
It's 3,100.
Thousands. I'm not sure where.
Okay. Well, okay. So let's say just ballpark. We think you need like 65 with today's numbers. We won't inflate that out, but like we're targeting for like 65,000, which in theory would be more than you're taking home now, right? Because you're going to be spending, you know, no 401k, no FICA. But if your benefit at full retirement, which we'll just say for our generation is going to be 70, so there'll be like a little bit of a gap, but let's say it's 3,000 a month. That works out to be 36,000, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we were shooting at like 65, 66, you need to come up with another 30,000, right? That you need to supply, which makes sense. And so then the number we would be targeting to come up with that would be probably about $1 million would generate between conservatively would be 40,000. Mm-hmm. So you're going to target like $1 million in investments plus your Social Security. Also remember,
I know it's a big number.
It's a big number, but also remember that in 30 years, the mortgage is paid off, right?
Right.
Like, and maybe we paid off a little early, but we know that Social Security hits when the mortgage is paid off essentially, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So let's say right now you have about 200,000 between both, maybe a little over. If we just use 200,000 as a number and you're actively saving, but if we weren't actively saving and we were just going to use compounding of interest, which is, you know, the rule of 72. So if it's 7.2%, every 10 years, your money will double. So then at 53 with 200,000, we will have to change out of the 4% because we just gave a return using 7.2.
Right.
But if we do that, then from 43 to 53, it's 400,000. 53 to 63 is 800, right?
Mm-hmm.
4 to 8. And then 63 to 73, which is a little bit beyond where you'd want to target your retirement, but that takes you to 1.6.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. So what, so if, you know, 73 is still working 30 more years, it might not be the case, but that there's a huge jump between 63 and 73. Now, this is not with you adding any money. That's just if you had it invested and it averaged that amount out. But, you know, 1.6 at a 4% distribution rate, 64,000 a year. So the way it would work is you save now, you continue to save. You don't need to do 12% this year, but maybe over the next year, you get a raise and then you get a bigger raise and you can get that to 12% and still be comfortable. And then you're doing good with the budgeting, right? You're like living within your means. And everything's invested, you could probably get to $1 million in your early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a, you know, at that point, it gets a little more, not complicated, but a little more thoughtful of like, okay, well, I kind of like my job and I'd like my account to be, at, you know, cost of living has gone up and medical's gone up and I don't get medical until 65. So I'm definitely going to wait till 65 and then I'll just see how the market's doing. And then you kind of refine the whole thing, but you have like at least a target in your mind that I definitely need at least $1 million because I need at least 40,000 plus social to be at my current lifestyle.
So I feel comforted by that.
Okay.
Because it sounds possible, but I also wanted to kind of like figure out should I like reserve some money for like emergencies, like job loss, like the house, like all that stuff. And then it's not going to be invested. And then all that changes, of course. All those numbers will change. So, like, what is like a reasonable, I think, distribution, and how to, yeah, I have a lot of questions about how to invest it too.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I think that taking the most money you've ever had in a lump sum and investing it is scary. And I don't think you should do something that makes you uncomfortable. I think that you definitely want to have money set aside for an emergency. And my rule of thumb is you should not put money in the market, whether that's, you know, a mutual fund, ETF, but any, even bond funds, stock funds, whatever it is, if the time horizon is less than 2 years, just mm-hmm. because, you know, you've been around, you've seen the market, we can have a double down year, and you don't want to ever have an emergency and pull money out. And your emergency money is meant to make 4%, in my opinion. It's not, we know we might need it. And nobody, I've had people say, well, I'm not going to have an emergency. And I'm like, well, that's a great way to guarantee you're going to have one. It's just to put that out there. So I would say with the house, I would set aside about 6 months worth of expenses. I would mm-hmm. also use the higher mortgage amount
yeah.
of the, with the 6.75, like
it's coming.
And, yeah. Cause it's coming. And so if God forbid you lost your job when it hit, you want to have already factored that in. And there's also nothing wrong with going a little bit higher than that number. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause what you could say is I'm not comfortable with putting all of that money in the market. I'm only comfortable with half of it. That's okay. You're still, the projection I just ran you is a loose projection on compounding of interest just to show how powerful time is, but you're still investing, right? And we don't know what your income, that's using no contributions from now till then, which is not going to be the case. And like your income could go up and you could always switch jobs and get a better match. Like there's a lot of variables that are going to change. It's just so that you have a ballpark of what you're working towards. So I think that if you decided to keep half of it in cash at 4% and invest the other part with the goal of saying like within, you know, 2 years, depending on where I am, maybe I'll get that closer to, you know, 70,000 will be invested and I'll keep 30 in cash. Cash never hurts. It prevents a lot of problems and stress.
Yeah. Yeah. And my partner and I have both had job loss in the last 3 years that we didn't see coming, I guess mm-hmm. you could say. So we're both very like conservative about that and afraid to, like not have cash, just like sitting yeah. there waiting for that moment. Hopefully it'll never happen again, but you know, you never know.
So. You know, when you're prepared, it's, I don't want to say it's like less likely to happen, but it's less traumatic if it happens mm-hmm. when you're prepared for it.
Right.
So yeah, I don't think I would never say like, yeah, put it all in the market. Absolutely not. I think you want to pay off your credit card debt. You don't necessarily, you can do that from cash flow. I have no issue with that, but I would say you definitely want at least a minimum of 6 months. You could even err on the side of 12 months, depending on, I don't know, how long were you out of a job last time?
About 7 months.
Okay. So you could err on the side mm-hmm. of like, I want at least 12 months of expenses because that's my comfort level.
Yeah. Conservative.
Conservative. Yeah. I mean, I personally keep a lot of cash because I own a business and I have payroll. So mm-hmm. I don't ever want to, you know, have to say like, oh, can't cash your paycheck.
Right.
So I err on the side of being conservative as well personally. So yeah, I think what you want to do is like, you do want to get some of that money invested if it's going to be used for your retirement, but it doesn't have to be all in one day. You can do it incrementally at your comfort level. And you could even say my target is over the course of the year, I'm going to have half of it invested and I'm going to keep half of it readily available because I know that no matter what happens, I have like about a year's worth of spending for mm-hmm. myself.
Yeah. Awesome. In terms of like retirement, I think of like 401ks, like getting them, but you can't, I mean, I could put it in like my SEP IRA if I make the money, but like get it, how do you gonna get it into retirement accounts if it's just cash?
Wait, I don't know if I get your, so like your, the investment money?
So if it's gonna be for retirement, can it be in retirement accounts if it's just in cash now?
Okay, so in retirement, you can use all types of money to fund your retirement. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that it's good that you have a mix of money in retirement. So you'll have your former 401ks, your IRAs, you'll have your SEP IRA, which will be taxed the same as a regular IRA. There's different rules for contributions on that. Your, we'll call it private money, could also be used for your retirement in that you can live off of the investment income. You just pay less in tax on that account. So it can, yeah. So it's actually, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I actually think you're in a good position because your money is evenly split between IRA and non-IRA. And so the difference between IRAs, it's tax deferred. So you're not going to get any tax. There's no tax ramifications on it now. But when you go to retire, you're going to pay ordinary income. On your non-retirement money, the money you got from your house sale, it's private money. You will invest it. You will get a 1099 every year for the gains on those investments, not the price appreciation, just the, you know, dividends, interest, capital gains, depending on investment. And you'll pay incrementally as you go. And then we'll just say at 70, we'll just say you invest at 50. We'll say it's worth, I don't know. We think you're going to have about $1 million. So like, let's say you have 450,000 in there. And so then you start saying, okay, well, every month I'm going to take $700 out. So you'll owe some tax on it, but it'll be taxed at capital gains tax, not ordinary income.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you would supplement, let's say your retirement, your IRAs have grown to be bigger. So we'll just say that you're trying to come up with, in this instance, we'll say you have 3,000 a month. So 700 is going to come from your non-retirement. And then the other 20, you know, 300 is going to come from your IRA. So you just have different types of money.
Got it. So yeah, I was thinking I had to like get it into a retirement account.
No, you don't have to. I actually think the fact that you have it split both ways is nice. The non-retirement is more tax. It's not tax efficient for growing it, if that makes sense, but it is tax efficient when you take it out. You will get a 1099 on it every year, but I think a nice retirement is when you have the different types of money. The other thing you could do is if you wanted to get a little bit more of it into like the very popular vehicle, which is a Roth IRA, you could invest those monies and then at the end of the year take gains from that private investment. You know, we'll just say you invest 50,000 of that 100. And then let me just check the Roth, because you're a single filer, right? For tax purposes?
Yeah.
Okay. So, as a single filer for a Roth IRA, you are eligible to do up to 7,000. So what you could do with the 50, let's say you invest it, 50s in cash for emergencies, comfort, reduce stress. The other 50s invested, let's say you had a great year and the account's up like 20%. It's up 20. Yeah.
Sounds good.
It's up $10,000. And it can happen. You can have a great year like that. Not every year, but you can. And so you take the profit out of that account. It's 10,000, some of it. And you say, I'm going to take 7 of it and I'm going to put it in a Roth IRA. And then it never pays tax again.
That sounds good too. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great. So you can use you can invest it and then it's fully liquid. And then you just look at the profits every year and you can take the profits and put those in a Roth.
Okay.
And then so that's technically retirement.
The profit of the first investment account is eligible to be in a Roth.
Let's say we have your 100,000 in cash. We're going to leave 50 at the 4% high yield. And then we're going to take 50 and we're going to put it in ABC ETF. I'm not going to use a real name. So we're going to use make-believe. We put it in the ABC ETF, but you say, I like the idea of having every type of money when I get to retirement. I want IRA, Roth, and private. So we already have IRA. We already have private. We don't have Roth. You are eligible to contribute to a Roth every year rather than cash flow it. Every year at the end of the year, you're going to look at your investment account and say, okay, ABC ETF, I made 4,000. Great. I'm going to take the profit out because you're going to pay on that anyway, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. In theory, depends on exactly how it made money. But like if we say high level, you pay on profit. You're going to take that money out and you're going to put it in a Roth. And so every year you're going to look at your investment account and say, oh, I made some money. I'm going to put it over into the Roth.
Makes sense. Okay.
So then you have all three vehicles. Then you have IRA, Roth, and private. And so when you get to retire.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Retirement. Yeah, it's great. And when you get to retirement, the Roth, after 5 years and 59 and a half, has zero tax liability. Take it out, no tax consequence. The IRA, you're going to take out fully taxable, 100% taxable at ordinary income brackets. And then the private money that you got from the house sale, you will pay, we'll just say it's a long-term holdings, you're going to pay long-term capital gains rates.
Okay, gotcha. Lots of different taxes for
lots of different tax consequences. Yeah. So I think that's what I would do is I think that the one thing you haven't done is a Roth, and you could do a Roth and you don't need to cash flow it, but you could invest part of the money you got from the house sale. And then every year, just once a year, look to it and say, okay, it's up. I'm going to take, you know, what I'm allowed to use for the Roth from there and put it over into the Roth. So now I have IRA, Roth, and private. Awesome. And you still have a lot in cash.
This is like so interesting. I don't know where else I would get this information.
Well, my goal is that this is helpful. Yeah. So yeah. The tricky part too is like there's no perfect solution, right? Like there's no, you know, perfect. I think that since you are doing good budget wise and you haven't utilized the Roth, I think that that's an opportunity for you. I think if I were you, I would just do it out of the profit of the non-retirement, like ideally over the next, you know, 25 years, there'll be years that we have good markets and years we have down markets. And on the years that you have, you know, some profits, I think you could start funding the Roth. And then as you get more comfortable with the different vehicles and the tax consequences, you might even say like, my cash has grown because it's been sitting in 4% for a couple of years. You know, I'm making more money. I'm going to funnel some more money into, I'm going to max out the Roth every year now, mm-hmm. you know, whether or not the account goes up that amount, I'll just take some from cash. So you'll get more comfortable with it. But yeah, I would say, I think you could target investing half of it and then keeping half as you're comfortable.
Yeah.
And as, yeah, if your income grows, you'll accumulate, if your budget, ideally your budget stays comparable, right? You bought the house, right? And then if your cash starts to grow, then you could funnel more over to investing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think it's just really hard to switch over from, yeah, just like not having like a frugal mindset to now I have money. What the heck do I do with it? And what's the perfect answer? I think like you said, there's no right answer, but no perfect. So it's like, it could be anything. So that's been really hard for me. Like I'm like just reading stuff all the time. I'm like, where do I put this money?
It's not binary. That's the hard part. It's not like black or white. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. what fits me? And I think that you've done a really good job. And so if we can replace approximately what you're living on now, then I think you'll be comfortable in retirement, and that number can adjust. Like if your salary goes up to like 75, you're like, well, this is definitely the number I need. Well, then you just adjust. Mm-hmm. But I think the key is, you know, dipping your toe in the water with the investing of the non-retirement. It works. It literally is the same as retirement. The difference is the tax consequences. It's right. that it's, the investments, you could be an ABC ETF in your 401k, an ABC ETF in your traditional IRA, an ABC ETF in your private investment. The like structure of IRA, 401k, SEP, and, you know, non-retirement is all just, what are the rules around the money? Like that rules being like, do you have to be in a workplace plan to do it? Or are you self-employed to do it? What are your tax consequences? When can you access the money and how can you access the money? Are there required distribution? Or those are all the rules around those like little codes. But the investment aspect of it is the same, can be the same. And so I think the key is just like dipping your toe into the water with the investment on the magic number. And then, cause you can like kind of self, I mean, I think this would be more of like a mind trick of like, I'm always going to have 50. Mm-hmm. The other one I'm going to try to grow, right? The other 50 I want to try to grow, but I know for sure I have 50. And then I think as you get more comfortable, you can adjust.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's really helpful.
Yeah, because the compounding of interest is not super impressive if we use 4%.
Right.
The numbers just are not as magical.
And I don't think it'll stay 4% forever. So no. I'm like, well, what's going to happen when it goes to like 0.5% again?
Hopefully we stay like somewhere between like 3 and 4. But yeah, that's why I would dip your toe in the water, but I wouldn't pressure yourself to do it all in one shot or all overnight. Like you can do it incrementally and just know, like my husband was very conservative. He had like literally kept cash. Like I was like, oh, I'm surprised you don't have it under your mattress. You like kept it in the closet. So I was like, we need to invest your money. Like you can't, like it just doesn't grow enough
right.
in the closet. It's safe, you know, from like his perspective. So we put the money in, and of course, it's just the way it works. We put all of it in at once. and like ripped the Band-Aid off, and it just went straight down, just like down. And he was just like, I can't believe I gave you all my money, and now I have less money. And I'm like, I know. This is part of this is like, we're just going to like rip the Band-Aid off and just get you used to investing. It's like, it goes up and it goes down. He's like, but it's only gone down. And I'm like, right. But you've only been in the market for like 4 months, and it's not been a good 4 months. So now fast forward, I think it's like 2 years later. Cause you, when you go down, then it takes a while to come back up because you're working with less money when you go down. Mm-hmm. You started with 20 and you go down to 15. Well, you need to get back up to 20 before you feel, you know. So he's finally back up, and now he loves it. He was like, this is great. Have you seen my account? I was like, do you remember how miserable you were in the beginning when it just went down? Like, it does. It has to do both. So you just have to get comfortable. Like, just like you were saying, when you're checking your 401k and your IRA, it goes up and it goes down. Mm-hmm. If you have that like macro perspective, which you need to have with long-term investing, is it will trend up over time, but you have to take that bird's eye view, right? Of like, the ups and downs will even itself out. But that's why I would start with a smaller amount, make sure that you're comfortable with how much you have on in cash so that you can stomach the like ups what and down happens. In yeah. the market. Yeah. And just remember, there's a reason you can make money in the market is because you have to stomach the downturn. You're like earning your return is what I say.
Gotcha.
You don't have to earn it in the bank, right? It's like you check it and it's the same, a little better every day, right?
Yeah.
But you definitely have to earn it in the stock market because it will go up and it will go down.
Yeah, I'm old. I'm just old enough to remember 2008, and I had a little retirement account then, and it cratered. It was just awful. So it is like, you know, hard to get over, I think.
But that is why, like, 2008, when you're like about to file for retirement is different than like when you have money to invest. And so if a 2008 happened again, and let's just say you put in your 50,000 and you have 50,000 in cash and the market literally goes on super sale down 40%, you could say, you know, I'm going to take another 5,000 out of the bank. I'm comfortable with 45 and put mm-hmm. it in because now I'm going to buy everything on super sale.
Right.
Right. Because it's perspective. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I worked in 2008 as well. And I went and bought not a lot because I was like beginning of my career. So I went and bought a couple. I don't even remember what stocks I bought. I went and bought a couple and everything recovered. And I do remember that I went to Europe with the money and it was great.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't even remember what the stocks were, but I know that I went to Ibiza and Nice and had a great time with, I don't want to say found money, but like most of it came from that, those stock right. purchases. So yeah, it's all perspective. But yeah, you want to get comfortable with, so it starts small and then, but I do think your opportunity is like to add a Roth to the mix.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Very cool. I also have access to a Roth 401k at work, mm-hmm. and I don't really know how that works at all. It's like maybe not as popular to talk about as like an IRA. So I don't know. Do I have to like do a payroll deduction for that? And mm-hmm. that's the only way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Roth 401k, you can absolutely do. It comes in after tax. So if you were doing 11% of your salary, it's a dollar for dollar difference. So if you put, you know, if you're putting 6,000 into the Roth 401k, it's going to be 6,000 from your compensation versus now you get a deduction for the federal taxes, not because you don't have state tax, but federal, you're not paying on it. So that's your other option is if you want to do it through payroll, you can add Roth inside of your 401k at work as a percentage. What I would say is you're eligible. You're in the position where you're eligible for Roth IRA and you also have it at work. So the tricky thing about the work one is you can't just do a one pay. I don't think you can, but usually you can't just do one paycheck goes into my Roth. Like my 26th paycheck is just right. Roth. So I think for you, the Roth IRA will give you the flexibility to say, well, I'm only going to do 4,000, I'm only going to do 3, and you just do it once a year, or I will do 7, where the Roth 401k will work just like the traditional 401k, which is payroll driven. It'll be every pay period.
Okay.
Gotcha. You're just not going to get that tax break.
So is there any benefit to doing it that way? This is just an extra account.
Yeah. You know? So for there's people that are not eligible for a Roth IRA.
Oh, okay.
So the only way they can get a Roth is through work. Because the 401k has no income limitations on it.
That makes sense. Okay.
So you are in the position where you have access to the Roth outside of work and inside of work, but a lot of people are only eligible, like if they hit the income limits, then the only way they can get Roth is through work.
And so then they have to choose, like, I'm going to do part IRA, part Roth, or all Roth. I think if the traditional IRA or traditional 401k is working for you now and you're comfortable on your budget, I think I would just do the Roth outside of work with, like, mm-hmm. your excess. I think the workplace plans are wonderful and they work great, but they're not not as good about doing, like, one time unless you have a bonus, unless you can allocate your bonus. Usually you can say your bonus does blah, 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 and then you could do your bonus to your Roth if you wanted to. They're more about consistently over your pay periods, right. where mm-hmm. the Roth IRA, it's up to you. You can do it once, twice.
Gotcha. That makes
sense. And the other big difference between the Roth 401k and the Roth IRA is a contribution limit. So the Roth 401k has a much higher limitation, right? You can do $23,500.
I wish I had that much money to put in.
Yeah,
there.
You just have, you, I mean, you also need to, you have the, I like to have fun account, you know? Yeah. So like, it's, that's why I like to say it's a balance. And so I think for you, you're doing a really good job saving on the IRA. You're getting your federal tax break, which I think is good. You have the private money. So I really think the gap would be like the Roth IRA, mm-hmm. because you're going to have, at this point, you're 50-50 between private money and IRA, which I think is a good split. So adding some like Roth money, so just so you have that too in retirement, I don't think it needs to be your biggest vehicle. I think that would impact the fund budget. So I think just throwing the extra at the end of the year, like the profit, would make the most sense.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, because at some point, you know, if you're doing married filing joint and your partner is still doing really well on commission, you might not be eligible for a Roth IRA.
Right. Yeah. A lot of things could change.
Yeah. Sure. Like my husband was eligible and then we got married and now he's not eligible. So, you know, like that can happen.
Yeah.
So I think while you're eligible, I would do it that way.
And I have another question about, so we got hit by 3 hurricanes last year.
Yeah. 100-year storms down there.
Yeah. And I don't, hopefully that won't happen again this year, but I'm like worried maybe 30 years is like a little too optimistic that we would live mm-hmm. in this house particularly. I don't know. With everything, climate change and hurricanes and insurance mm-hmm. rates and whatever. So I guess when like you make a big change, like if we've got a different house or move somewhere, lots of things happen. Do you kind of project your retirement again the same way with new numbers? Like now I need more money. Yep. And I have to do this all again. Okay.
So you just continue to adjust it, right? Because like that's a hard part about retirement. It's a bit of a moving target, mm-hmm. you know, when you start early, which you should. My dad's analogy was always like, if you were to put a garden together, you like lay it all out and you're like, okay, this is going to go here. That's going to go here. But then you like still weed the garden. Right? Like you still go in and make adjustments, or that plant didn't do well because it wasn't getting sun. So you can't just like set the garden and forget about it. You put a lot of work to establishing it. So you establish your plan. Like, okay, this is our plan, but then you still have to go in and like adjust it and tweak it. And sometimes you have to do a bigger adjustment because you sold a house and you're buying a new house. So yeah, you just continually tweak it.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, we're set for life. No, wait,
I think you're like with the debt payoff, it's a little easier, right? Like you literally it is a little more like set it and forget it. Like here's our debt payment and we're going to do this for 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. With the retirement and like planning aspect on the flip side, it's like, no, we have to adjust. If you're, you know, if you get a big raise and or you decide we're not going to live in St. Pete and we're going to move to another area that's like higher cost of living, right? Like that has to, so then maybe we do need to increase the 401k or, yeah, you have to continually adjust it.
Yes. Well, anything can happen. I mean, it's been, the past 3 years have been kind of surprising in lots of different ways. So that's where that conservative streak comes to.
Yeah. I just think having extra money, like, who knows what will happen with the market? Like if you invest, you get 50 invested and then there's a huge correction, then like it gives you the opportunity to like put more in. That's like the time people don't usually want to put money in. Mm-hmm. But if your job's pretty steady and like you've accrued some more cash by saving, then you're like, okay, I could probably put some more in. And that is the time to do it. It's usually the time most people like want to get out of the market, but that is usually the sign to like get in is when it's on super sale. So that it gives you more control from that standpoint as well.
It's like a future investment fund.
Yeah.
Or at the right time.
If there's a great buying opportunity fund, mm-hmm. like we see, like there's a massive sale and stuff. can't resist.
Yeah, I mean, just this will be my first year of getting, or the second year of getting the company stock in my retirement, mm-hmm. but the first time I'm going to see like the increase of the return or whatever. So yep. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. I mean, I think it's going to go really positively because we always have pretty good returns. So I don't know. Next year, I might want to like buy more of that
stock. Yeah. That's why you want to just like make sure what you're doing is comfortable, right? So like mm-hmm. I wouldn't increase the 401k yet. Like 11% is good. See how it goes with, you know, the new house, the utilities. Like maybe the utilities are like only $150 each a month, right? Then that's like extra money. And then I would keep more on cash. I think some people would say, oh, you can invest like leave 20 in cash, invest the rest. I think just err on the side of caution. I think it's better to get comfortable with it and have extra cash and continue to have a solid budget and plan in place mm-hmm. than to get overly aggressive.
Yeah. The psychology of it is all very interesting and new.
It is very interesting. It is very interesting.
I'm like, I have money. That's easy. But it's not easier. It's much harder. It's like,
Find it harder than having the debt?
Yeah, I think debt payoff, you have like a number you're trying to hit and then you hit it. And then that's like mm-hmm. a super easy goal. It's like, oh, there it is. I did it. It's like one track mind. Like, here we go. And then I think saving money, I'm like, what do I do? And it makes me feel like confused. Wait, I don't know.
You're doing a good job. I mean, you have a lot saved.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting better at it, I think.
That's why I would like baby step, you know, like mm-hmm. get comfortable with like how to invest the amount, and like I wouldn't start at 50. I would say like your goal is to get there over time, but start small. You do want to make sure you have a beneficiary set up on that, right? Beneficiaries are mm-hmm. automatic or available readily for IRA and Roth and SEP, but like yes. you have to add a beneficiary to a non-retirement account. It doesn't come with it. Yeah, and then I would explore the Roth. I think that would make sense. Maybe not this year, but for next year after like you've had some money invested for a bit, like add some to that.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Just like the debt payoff, it doesn't happen overnight, you know, and like getting comfortable with the investing and saving and hitting those goals. Like it takes a little bit of time mm-hmm. to get comfortable with it all.
Yeah. I look forward to being like, oh, I'm just so successful at this.
You will be. You will be. You have a great foundation. Yeah. You have a great foundation. Any other questions?
I probably have a million questions. I just can't think of anything right now.
Okay, well, we're going to
change all the time, so.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere.
Awesome.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And for all of our lovely listeners, you can follow us for the most up-to-date information on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, and our website is www.futurerichpodcast.com.
Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.